You're in a good place now. You are listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. You know, tonight we're talking about spirituality. We're talking about psychedelic drugs. We're talking about DMT, shrooms, and LSD. And can you get connected to the spiritual realm with the use of these drugs? You know, whether you were born in the 60s or you're connected to the 60s, I think a lot of us appreciate and wonder and ponder the uses of certain types of drugs, whether they're shrooms, psychedelic mushrooms, LSD, or DMT. You know, whether you've experienced with these or experimented with these, whether you know somebody, you've researched them, or a friend has told you about them, and you know there's a connection to a higher dimension, maybe a more open eye, more open-minded to the unseen, to the less explored aspects of our life. You know, I think it's interesting because a lot of times, you know, we deal with what we see versus what is reality. And I'm a big proponent of conscious thinking. You know, and I like to use air quotes, seeing reality, not just accepting what we were presented or shown. You know, throughout my childhood, I really connected with nature. The trees, the animals, the plants, the vegetables, the vegetation, especially even the vegetables that were growing in my grandmother's garden. And I felt one with them. I felt connected. You know, I experienced their life and their growth. And when I was young, I could actually feel them breathe. Throughout high school and the college process, I think most of us agree that, you know, we felt nature, but we were kind of out of sight, out of mind. We were dealing with those kind of rough years, maybe a little gangly, maybe not fitting in, and trying to fit in the human condition. You know, in the last 5 years of my life, however, I've come full circle back to the child, back to the childlike stage to feel and to experience life. You know, I touch trees. I hug trees. For a long period of time, I would secretly touch them. Touch them on their bark or their side. And a lot of friends would always kind of look at me and go, what are you doing? No, not much. Nothing over here to see. Nothing going on over here. No, just me standing by this tree. You know, I like to watch the flight of the birds. I like to see the wind in the trees. I like the sound and the rhythm of the earth. And I'm definitely deeply connected to Mother Earth, and she is connected to me. You know, I talk with my friends about the environment and nature and being one with nature, and how do they feel about nature? And it's always an interesting story that you hear. You know, when we were kids, especially little boys like to do what? They climb trees. You know, and little girls would play, and I think all boys and girls would play fort. You know, build a little fort and, you know, keep people out, allow people to come in. You know, like our little place, our little clubhouse, our little secret clubhouse where, you know, you have your little army men or your dolls or your toys, and you'd sit there and hang out. And we did a lot of this when we were kids. Well, for most of us, that's the only time we did it. You know, it's weird how we grow up, and it seems like we get so distant away from our beginning reality. You know, and it's weird because a lot of my friends tell me, I used to hang outside all the time. I used to climb trees. I used to be outside. We used to play hide and go seek all the time. And then something happened. You know, for the girls, it was mostly allergies or asthma. You know, mom started seeing, little Allison coughing and hacking and sneezing and then eventually couldn't catch her breath. And so it was off to the doctor they went. She's got asthma and allergies. You need to keep her inside. The last thing she needs to do is be climbing trees and around a lot of flowering plants. It's going to get worse. Her condition's going to get out of control. You never know. She could be allergic to something else. She should stay indoors for a while. And some of us got hurt. Some of us got hurt pretty bad doing something outside, and mom got scared. Mom got scared because she couldn't protect the child. She thought that. And she thought that it'd be better to bring the child inside to have a careful watch. It's time to watch over the child. And I think that's interesting because a lot of these situations that happened took us away from nature. You know, whether it was because we got hurt or because we got allergic or something stung us. And now we need a, we don't know what we need. You know, we don't know what to do. Do we need an EpiPen? Does mom have to have an EpiPen everywhere? Can we teach our daughter how to use an EpiPen? And you have all these issues surrounding the fact that nature is really where we need to connect with. You know, I was at breakfast earlier, way earlier today. Wow. Long day today, but a good day. I was at breakfast back in the early morning, and I sat there with two friends of mine, and a friend of mine told me, he said, you know, one of the keys to dealing with stress is when you're in a meeting and there's a break and you get a chance to go outside, no matter what dress shoes you're wearing, no matter how thick of socks for men, no matter how terribly hard it is to take off your heels for women, get out there and walk barefoot on the grass. Experience it. Try it. It can take that stress right away because you forget about the stress from the meeting and all of a sudden you're worried about, am I stepping on something? I better watch out. I can't step there. I need to make sure there's no glass. You start worrying about your feet. You know, my deal is that I like to put my feet in grass. I like to walk around because it makes me feel good. And, you know, I've always been connected with Mother Earth and I understand that connection so well that especially when you make a full-on connection, it just seems perfect. And I think it's interesting, though, how as kids, we love being outside. We love playing in the park. We love playing in our backyard. We love playing in the trees and the flowers and the fields. We love gathering wild, you know, wild different plants and flowers and the wildflowers. And I remember Indian paintbrush, the Indian paintbrushes. And I remember as a young child, those were quite edible plants, actually. I don't know if any of y'all ever experienced it, but it kind of tastes like honey when you ate the inside. And now I know as a more of an adult what that meant. But yes. And now it's funny. You get around wildflowers and you start sneezing and you get hay fever. You're looking for the Advil sinus and allergy. But it's like we have to get back to that. And I believe there's a way back and I believe there's a way to reconnect. You know, I feel that most people, especially nowadays, the children of today, rarely experience the outdoors anymore. We're so caught up in this day-to-day life, not realizing how to incorporate nature and ourselves and eventually connect the two. When we're all honest and we all believe in honesty for the better and a more fulfilling life, and we understand that honesty and being authentic is the true lifestyle, we can begin to integrate and to work together harmoniously and be in harmony with nature and ourselves. It's amazing. And I love nature. I'm one of those people, oh my gosh. You know, out at one of the studios that we broadcast from, my main hub, I guess you could say, there were six big oak trees that I loved. I loved them, and I still love them today, but they were cut down to make the road bigger. And it wasn't until I went to work one night at the studio where I got there and I was like, something's missing. Something's wrong. I feel like I've lost a friend. I had lost six friends. Six of my favorite trees were cut down. It's like they're always wanting to cut down trees to add more concrete. It's unbelievable to me. But you know, it's not all just about nature. It's about things that we don't always see. It's about understanding the unseen, about understanding the real deep connection we have with ourselves and the reason why we're here. Because there is a deep reason. There's a reason why we're here on planet Earth. There's a reason why we're living a purpose-filled life. There's a reason why we look for purpose in our life. There's just a reason we're not just all over the place. And most of us realize there was a time in our life when we were all over the place. We were crazy. We were going crazy. We were doing our thing. We were out of control. We were loving every minute of it. But I think, you know, when we get older, we kind of get more set in our ways. We find it difficult to go back to the basics of nature, to go back to the basics of the things that we enjoyed as children. And I think this is where awareness and connection and possible experimental practices can come into an honest person's reality. I'm not endorsing drugs in this show. I want to get that out of the way first and foremost. However, I feel like getting back to nature and seeing life with an honest, authentic viewpoint is most important and always underestimated. You know, on tonight's Perspectives, I've asked a friend of mine to join. Dr. Rick Strassman will join us tonight. Dr. Rick Strassman is known for a recent book that came out, DMT, the Spirit Molecule. I believe Joe Rogan narrated the documentary of DMT, the Spirit Molecule, as well as his brand new book. His brand new, I like to call it, healthy and honest book / dissertation on DMT and the Soul of Prophecy, a new science of spiritual revelation in the Hebrew Bible. You know, I think it's interesting because when we think about drugs and we think about psychedelic drugs in particular, we normally look toward different models of religion. We look either toward Buddhist, Eastern philosophies, which normally comes second nature, or shamanic type religions, type models. And rarely do you ever hear anybody talk about how the Old Testament or the Hebrew Bible directly relates to prophecy. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there, including Strassman and many other proponents, who believe that psychedelic drugs can get you closer to prophecy, to understanding what we don't see, to being able to reason and to get closer to the God. Whether you believe that God is within you, whether you believe that God is the creator, to get us closer to the source of creation. And I think a lot of times, being that we are set in our ways sometimes as adults and we've left the nature and we've left the outdoors behind, it seems even more difficult to get closer. And that's what we're talking about tonight. Tonight, we're talking directly with Dr. Rick Strassman. We're going to understand things about DMT, what DMT is, how it's formed in the body. You know, it's natural to the body, as well as what it can do when injected under medical advice, as well as prophecy, the Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible, and how all of these can connect with the experiences of volunteers under DMT and under Strassman's watch. So stay tuned. We return. We'll be talking directly with Dr. Rick Strassman, writer of DMT and the Soul of Prophecy. Stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. We'll be back in two shakes.
I'm learning to fly. Turn it up and jump in the deep end on Perspectives. Now, here's Ashley.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. You know, tonight's show, we're talking about something that's kind of near and dear to my heart. I'm one of those spirituality type people. You know, I'm very interested in spirituality. I'm very interested in prophecy. I'm interested in the things that we don't necessarily see, the things that sometimes we wonder if do exist. We want to have a sign. We want to have some sort of marking, some sort of tail. And how are we going to figure that out? And a lot of people turn to certain drugs, DMT, shrooms, LSD, to try to connect with a certain spiritual level, to try to see some sort of prophecy, to be given some sort of agreement that what they believe this whole time may actually be true. And you know, there's a lot of times when you look at life and you say, God, if I could just know what was really going on, if I just knew or understand where I stood, and if I was really thinking clearly, and if some of these things that come into my mind and some of the voices that I hear, is this reality? And I think when we get that sort of agreement or that sort of sign, we feel more complete. So I thought no better than to join us on tonight's show on Perspectives with Ashley Burgess is Rick Strassman. And I think a lot of people know Rick. He actually wrote DMT, the Spirit Molecule. And now he is here joining us on Perspectives to discuss his most recent work, DMT and the Soul Prophecy, a new science of spiritual revolution in the Hebrew Bible. Rick, thanks for joining us tonight. How are you doing?
Good, Ashley. Thanks for having me on your show today.
It's lovely to have you, and I've been reading your book, and I think it's amazing. And let's start off with a question that I know that a lot of our listeners want to hear, and it's just an easy, generic question. Why did you create this work?
Well, I came up with the idea after finishing my DMT study. I should probably briefly describe that work. I began that research with an interest in the biological bases of spiritual experience. And it seemed to me there must be some brain mechanisms that mediate spiritual states, the experiences of seeing visions, hearing voices, out of body experiences, ecstatic emotions, novel insights, those kinds of things. And after looking into the possible role of pineal melatonin in the early 80s, that didn't really quite pan out as a psychedelic compound that the brain made on its own that might mediate those states. I then turned my attention to DMT, which stands for dimethyltryptamine. It's a chemical cousin of serotonin and of melatonin. It's ubiquitous in the plant kingdom, and it occurs in every animal that's been studied to date. So it's quite psychedelic, and I thought that if giving DMT replicated certain features of spiritual states, then one could argue for a possible possible role of naturally occurring DMT in the human body, mediating those states, at least to the extent that they overlapped in their descriptions. The spiritual model that I had brought to bear on my work at the University of New Mexico in the early 1990s was primarily one that had grown out of years of practice and study of Zen Buddhism. And the ultimate goal of Zen practice is an enlightenment-like state, which has no form, has no content, there's no personality that remains. There's just emerging with the source of existence, what the Buddhists call the experience of emptiness. So I was expecting those kinds of experiences as the ultimate response to a high dose of DMT. And also my volunteers were too, because most of them were engaged in some kind of Eastern religious meditation practices. And another element of the Buddhist, model of spirituality is, on the visions and the voices on the one encounters in spiritual states are illusory, are false. They're kind of what is necessary to be shed on the way towards formless, empty state of enlightenment. So, the people in my study returned to describe after a large dose of DMT that the experience was quite full of content, and they interacted with the content of those states, questioning and answering, being healed, being threatened, being protected, all kinds of things. And also they maintained their sense of individuality and were able to interact with the contents of those states in a rather willful manner. Also, they came back from their experiences convinced in the reality of the experience. It seemed to them as if it were as real as everyday reality, or perhaps even more real.
I have a question, Rick, before we really get into the prophecy and some stuff that I'd like to ask you about Ezekiel and also Leo's descriptions that he had also. Let me ask you, I know a lot of people would like to know, how much DMT is honestly produced in the human body, on a daily basis?
Well, it's, kind of difficult to answer that. I speculated to a large degree in my first book that the pineal gland was responsible for the bursts of DMT that perhaps were mediating non-drug-related states. But it's been known for close to 60 years that the lungs make DMT. It appears that the lungs are continually producing small amounts of DMT. The concentrations in the blood are extraordinarily low. on the order of a billionth of a gram per milliliter of blood. You know, so we don't quite yet have the technology to determine the actual amounts of DMT that are being produced. I think ultimately we'll end up getting some kind of an indirect measurement of its activity, either through studying the genetic expression of the gene responsible for DMT synthesis, or else, you know, looking at the metabolites of DMT. But, you know, DMT is metabolized within a few seconds. So, it's quite transient. And the concentrations are extremely low. So I think we still have a way to go before we can really, you know, figure out what the concentrations are in everyday consciousness, and especially in altered states of consciousness.
You know, you begin with your book with the Hebrew prophet. You talk about Ezekiel, and you talk about how he experienced a vision that came upon him when he stood on the river shore. And I think that was interesting because it also kind of transcended, because you actually have a colleague that's, a psychologist, Leo, who also reported some of the same type of prophecy type feelings or same types of visions under the influence of DMT.
Right. Before we, you know, take the discussion much, you know, further, it would be helpful to explain my definition of prophecies compared to the kind of everyday, you know, definition.
Perfect.
Most people think about, you know, prophecy as predicting or foretelling. But that's an artifact of the Greek translation of the Hebrew word for prophet. The Greeks were interested in, you know, divination or, you know, forecasting when they entered into altered states. They translated the Hebrew word for prophet, which is Navi, into prophetes, which means to be able to speak before something happens. So, my definition is more in line, you know, with the actual, you know, Hebrew word, which refers to communicating or interpreting or being a spokesperson for. It can even be translated as, you know, bubbling up, you know, murmuring, those kinds of things. And you can experience foretelling or predicting in the classical, you know, prophetic experience as described in the Hebrew Bible, but there were a lot of individuals who experienced, you know, prophetic states, you know, visions and voices, you know, contact with God or God's intermediaries or angels without predicting. You can predict without, you know, being a prophet. Lots of the, you know, predictions of the, you know, biblical, you know, prophets never came true. Or if, you know, they occurred, they didn't occur in quite, you know, the way that the prophet articulated it. So foretelling can be a part of the prophetic experience, but I, you know, define it, you know, more, you know, generally as any spiritual experience as described by any figure in the Hebrew Bible.
That's interesting. Yeah, because I think that's a good definition. And I feel like a lot of people nowadays, and I feel like anybody that's in a spiritual type thought process or is looking for maybe answers or trying to figure out if where their thought process is and where their heart is aligned, is very interested in the work that you've done. So let's go back to talking about the prophet of Ezekiel and his visions and how you connect within this book. Leo was in his mid-30s, reported the following use. So when he was under the influence of the DMT, he actually had some of the same types of visions, the waterfall of flaming color, the visual field, that sort of thing. Can you kind of explain how you connected the two similarities together?
So after I completed my study, I ended up, you know, not being quite fulfilled by the Buddhist model. So for a number of reasons, I ended up, you know, returning, you know, to my roots, as it were, and opened up the Old Testament or the Hebrew Bible. And as I was reading through the encounters of the, you know, figures with God and with God's angels, inspiration those kinds of things. It seemed as if, you know, there was a lot of overlap between the descriptions of the phenomenology that the prophets encountered with the descriptions of my DMT volunteers. In the beginning of the prophetic and DMT states, you know, there's a rush. There's a lot, you know, there's a lot of anxiety. You can feel, you know, physically weak. Sound of rushing waters or a roar. And, you know, those are both described in the case of my volunteer Leo and in the case of the prophet Ezekiel. There's a lot of colors, you know, which are, you know, moving quite rapidly, you know, morphing, intensely saturated, very bright. The background of colors then kind of will morph into more recognizable objects. In the case of Leo, there were little, you know, figures, you know, little humanoid, you know, figures around, you know, 4 feet tall or so. In the case of Ezekiel, you know, they were these angels with, you know, multiple faces that spun around and were quite commanding. The commanding element was also described by Leo. These beings or these, you know, presences have got incredible power. There's a sensation of being disembodied. You're out of your body. You know, that happened with Ezekiel. That happened in the case of Leo. These beings speak. They spoke, you know, to Ezekiel after the initial display of colors, coalesced into the beings and the, you know, machinery-like background. And also that was the case, you know, with Leo as well. After these beings emerged from the flaming waterfall of color, they spoke to him too.
When we return, we're going to be talking more with Rick Strassman. We're going to talk about theoneurology as well as his model with theoneurology. Also kind of get even more in depth of the concept of God and finding God with DMT and more about the Hebrew Bible. So stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. We'll be back in two shakes.
This is Jake Busey, and you're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. Tonight we're talking with Rick Strassman. I think that a lot of people know Rick Strassman from DMT, the Spirit Molecule. He's recently come out with his most recent book, DMT and the Soul Prophecy, New Science of Spiritual Revolution and the Hebrew Bible. And right before the break, we were talking about wanting to discuss theoneurology. And I know that theoneurology is a model, a scientific model, that Dr. Strassman has created. Could you let us in on some insight on what theoneurology is?
Yes. I came up, you know, with the idea after looking carefully at the contemporary reigning paradigm of the biology of spiritual experience, and that is a model which is called neurotheology, which proposes that spiritual experiences are what we call a brain reflex, which occurs after the brain is exposed to certain stimuli like prayer or meditation, fasting, drumming, chanting, even psychedelic drugs. And it's only after the fact that, you know, people describe those states as spiritual. And these states occur in order to, you know, provide some kind of evolutionary advantage. You might be more creative, you might be more altruistic, for example. In terms of the mechanism, it is, you know, what I call a bottom up, you know, model. In other words, the brain, creates the impression of communicating with spiritual realities or communicating with God. You know, so it's a materialistic model, and you know, that's useful, but it also seemed kind of not quite balanced, and it wouldn't be especially satisfying for somebody who thinks of the spiritual world as paramount, as opposed to the spiritual world being a biological side effect, as it were. And as a result, I developed a complementary model, which I refer to as theoneurology, which is a top down model, it proposes that the spiritual world or divinity or God created the brain, configured it in such a manner as to be able to provide communication with us. And DMT could be one of the mechanisms by which certain features of the spiritual experience takes place. To the extent that giving DMT resembles, or the state which results from giving DMT causes spiritual kinds of effects, like the visions and the voices and the emotions, those kinds of things. So I'm proposing, at least with respect to the figures in the Hebrew Bible, is that there was an increase in activity of DMT when they entered into these prophetic states. And a number of people have proposed that figures in the Hebrew Bible took drugs, for example, like mushrooms or marijuana, those kinds of things. But if you keep in mind the fact that DMT is made naturally in the human body, you can dispense with looking for some outside agent which was responsible for mediating some of those effects.
It's interesting. Everybody that I know that has tried DMT in a situation where it was more about spiritual awareness, it wasn't just for the fun of it, they weren't under the influence of other drugs. They were trying that. They said they had, an amazing feeling. They were able to almost validate, or really honestly validate, some of the things that they've always thought to be true. And I agree with you. If it's something that's already part of the body, it doesn't seem like it's a foreign issue. And it seems like it might be a way for us to see things with clarity and reality. And I think that kind of goes into the concept of how lately, and even through, I guess, probably for the last 100 years, but more so even now, I see that there's a lot of art, and I believe that you touch on this in your book too, how there's a lot of art and music and a lot of technology, that comes from the use of psychedelics, from people doing psychedelics and creating these things. And I mean, even Steve Jobs talked about in his books and in his talks about how he used LSD on a consistent basis, and that's where he almost formulated or came up with a lot of this technology that's become some of the biggest selling products today.
Right. Yeah, I think if anything, that the psychedelics increase the function of the imagination, and I don't mean in terms of making things up, but in terms of visual realities. Making connections between ideas and objects that wouldn't otherwise be the case. So, yeah, in the case of Steve Jobs, that was a big factor with the discoverer of DNA, Francis Crick. I mean, he came upon that visual image on LSD. So there have been a lot of mathematical breakthroughs, scientific breakthroughs in the arts as well. As a result, I think of the particular responses of the imagination, to these drugs. But still, I mean, it isn't the case that if you're completely ignorant, or if you're drunk, or if you're doing speed, or if you're emotionally unstable, that doing these drugs will make you into some kind of genius. You need to have a fertile ground that they're working on in the first place. And, you know, that's another point, you know, that I, which I discuss in the new book, is that you have, you know, to develop your intellect as well as your imagination. When you do experience the enhanced function of the imagination under the influence of these drugs, you're able to extract information from what you see and to apply it and integrate it, understand it, make the most of it.
I agree with you, Rick, because I have some friends that, you know, you always have those friends that kind of go crazy, and we love them to death. But at the same point, you know, I'll ask them about some of the things that they're doing, and I just go, you know, I understand that you're having fun, but I think you're missing the boat. And I think it's something that, and I've done a lot of research on it myself, and I think DMT is one of those things that, if used correctly, could probably open your mind and open your eyes to a lot of reality. But I think some people choose to use it recreational under the influence of other things and what have you. So let's talk about what you're working on now, because I know that you've been so prolific in everything that you've been doing, and I know that this has been a labor of love and an intense labor of love, this recent book, DMT and the Soul of Prophecy, but I want to know what your journey is setting off to at this point.
Yeah, well, I've been studying the life of Abraham, you know, the biblical, you know, figure Abraham. I still am, you know, kind of consulting with research groups and introducing people to each other, working on, you know, papers on, you know, psychedelics, especially ayahuasca. I have a colleague in Brazil that has been doing some interesting ayahuasca work. But in terms of what I've been, you know, primarily, you know, focusing on, it's, you know, the life of Abraham. I think that the contemporary view of the spiritual properties of these drugs has been focused on Buddhism and Latin American shamanism. But, you know, I don't think, you know, those are quite the right, you know, fit because of the Western, you know, mind that is, you know, taking these drugs. You know, so the Bible, I think, is as good a place, you know, to look at, you know, for a key to interpret and understand and integrate these states. So I've been, you know, looking at the, you know, figure of Abraham, who was, you know, the founder of Judaism and ultimately, you know, the founder of Islam and Christianity. And, you know, experienced the first, you know, prophetic encounter, you know, with the God of the Bible, you know, the creator and sustainer of the universe. So, you know, he lived a prophetic life, and he taught a prophetic way of living and a prophetic way of thinking. But at the same time, it didn't involve, you know, the law, regulations and strictures. It was what was called by, you know, Philo, you know, the natural law. You know, so it was kind of a, you know, psychedelic, prophetic encounter, which led him to a specific, you know, way of life and a specific, system of belief. So I think it's important to get his story out there, fictionalized, you know, probably, as a means of introducing, you know, psychedelic, you know, concepts within the framework of the Judeo-Christian, you know, Muslim worldview. So I'm currently reading, taking notes, you know, thinking about what, form a, you know, fictional, treatment of his, you know, life might take. So that's more or less what I'm working on, you know, nowadays.
That's really neat, because I think a lot of people need to understand that this is directly related to the Old Testament as well as the Hebrew Bible, because you're right. A lot of us look outside to Buddhists or to a shaman to give some sort of creed to this reality, when I think it existed in probably all religions. But I do definitely believe in the Hebrew Bible that it did exist. So I think that you are the only person and the pioneer that is putting two and two together and allowing people in the Western civilization to understand that we have connections to this as well.
Right, right. You know, it isn't like, supposed to replace people's interest in Buddhism or shamanism, but I think most, you know, people are ignorant of their own backgrounds, and if they can be introduced to it in a compatible way, I think that would be important contribution.
You know, I know my listeners are probably wondering where they can get some more information or learn some more information about you, as well as, you know, where would you go to find DMT and the Soul of Prophecy, or DMT, the spirit molecule?
Well, people can, you know, log on to my website. It's rickstrossman.com, and you can read about me and my work. You can order my books there, too, in which case I will sign and inscribe them. Or you can, you know, order the books on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your local bookstore, those kinds of places.
Very neat. Yeah, because I there's just so much. You have such a wealth of knowledge on this subject matter, and it's just one of a kind. I'd like to have you back on Perspectives to even talk more and get even deeper into your concept and in your neurological model, and really get to understand a little bit more. And if you have a chance to do that in the next few weeks or months, that would be awesome.
Okay, sure. Yeah, let's talk about it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Rick, and we enjoyed having you on Perspectives, and I look forward to talking with you again pretty soon.
Okay, my pleasure, Ashley.
Thank you so much.
You could be my luck. Get in here. You're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess. We'll be safe and
sound. Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. You know, this interview with Dr. Rick Strassman was eye-opening. I think it was very interesting. Because a lot of times we don't look in our own backyard to define things within our own realm. We have a tendency of looking outside of ourselves to try to figure ourselves out. You know, I've learned one thing. Well, I've learned a lot of things. But I've learned one thing in the last 3 or 4 years that's very interesting, is that everything that we see outside of ourselves is within ourselves. And I think that the show has more than just psychedelic drug implications. And it has more than just nature and understanding different models of religion. It has to do with you. You know, where are you right now in your life? How do you feel about where you are? Are there things that you want answers to? Are there things that you're looking for to say, yes, aha, I was right. That's how I thought it was. I knew it. You know, that's always a good glimmer of light. And when you actually realize something, that you know that you've been thinking about this since you were a child. And you find out it's true. You know, I think that we're allowed to do what we want to do in life to find ourselves, to understand ourselves. Because it's interesting how it takes us to normally go outside of ourselves to come full circle and figure it all out. You know, it's almost like a bell ringing in the background that just tells us that, hey, we're on the right track. You know, when I was a young kid, I was in Catholic school. I also went to Catholic school, and I went to Catholic church. And my parents, you know, would send me, drive me up to CCD every Wednesday, and I would go to church with them every Saturday night or Sunday morning. But on CCD, I went through school, I went through catechism, I became an altar server. And when I was, you know, going through my sins and being in confession, the priest asked me, "Child, what sins have you committed?" And I said, "Well, I'm pretty good with them. I've already talked to God about them. I'm kind of connected, so I'm good." He's like, "Wait a second. No. That's not the way it works. And you know that's not the way it works. You've gone through CCD. You've gone through all these classes." And I go, "Okay, well, I cheated on a math test with Beth Baker because I didn't know how to do it. And I cheated and I got caught. And it really sucked. And anyway, yeah, I got an F." He's like, "Now, was that so hard?" And he's like, "So tell me about the rest of the things that, you know, you've done. You know, you're a young kid. You've probably done something." And I said, "Well, I've already talked to God about it. I'm pretty cool about it." He's like, "Let's go into the church and let's talk." So we left the confessional area. And we walked into the church and we sat on the first pew. And he's like, "Ashley, you know, the Catholic Church works a certain way. And, you know, we're not saying that you have to follow all rules and regulations, but this is how the church was designed." He said, "So you've gone through all the teachings and you realize that we have confession, and that confession your sins, and you let those go, and you do Hail Marys and you do other sort of things in the process to basically admonish the guilt and the problem that you have with what you've committed." I said, "I agree with that, but can't we all be connected?" And, you know, at the time, I was a young kid, and at the time, my dad was a salesman. He sold medical devices. And my dad was a salesman. And I remember him always coming home talking about the middleman. And how the middleman was always driving up the price. And as a young kid, you always want to listen to your parents because, you know, they're older than you and they're your parents. And, you know, you're trying to learn stuff. So you kind of hang on every last word. I was one of those kids that would actually repeat cuss words, not because I wanted to, but because I was listening to every word and would repeat the cuss words, which is funny. And my mom started feeling bad about that. Anyway, she didn't cuss that much, but you know how it is. You know, being a parent's hard enough. So my dad would talk about the middleman. And, you know, I told the priestess, and my dad talks about the middleman, how the middleman raises the price, and that's a problem. And I said, so really, honestly, sir, I'm not being rude, but aren't you the middleman? If I can go directly to the source, and you're kind of standing in the middle, I don't really understand. And I saw him take a big breath in and a big sigh out. And you could tell that this is probably one of the first times he's ever dealt with this, especially with somebody my age, and probably his entire career as a priest. And he looked at me and he said, you know, I think there's some people that would probably argue with you. On the other hand, I'm not here to argue with you. And I'm not here to put you down. I'm here to help. And he said, you know, I think it might be good for you to go around and see what you want to do. Look around outside of the Catholic Church. Look into other religions. Get educated. Allow yourself to have knowledge of things that you don't already know about right now. And then step back and make an educated decision based on the knowledge that you get. And I looked at him, I said, that's a really great idea. And eventually when I get to move out of the house, I'll go check out those other churches. In the meantime, I'll probably be here. However, I can check out books and I can read stuff in the library, and I definitely plan on doing that. And I appreciate your candor and I appreciate your honesty. And I walked out of that church and I said, you know, hey, I'm still part of this church. And I believe in people getting together in a common ground. But yes, I made an agreement with myself that night. I would look around. I would get to know my surroundings. And not only that, I wouldn't take things at face value. I wouldn't just take what I've been taught or told as reality to be the gospel truth. No pun intended. And I have no problem with Catholicism. Don't get me wrong. Some great Catholics out there. However, I think that a lot of times in life, we are brought up a certain way. And our parents do the best they can, right? They do the best they can because that's what they know. I mean, you can't hold much grudge to them. I mean, unless they were just awful parents, you know. And there's some people out there that have had awful childhoods. But the grudge only gets to us. You got to forgive and move on. And I know it can be very painful because some people have done some really rotten things to their children. However, we all have a new life and we have a time to breathe and to run free and to fly. And there's no last time. There's no, oh God, I'm too old. It's too old for me. Y'all go ahead. Life's behind me. Y'all jump on the rescue boat and I'll stay here on the ship and just die. I'll go down with the Titanic. Nope, that's not how it works. There's no last time. There's no I'm too old. There's no I'm behind the eight ball. Every day is another chance to get to know yourself. And the reason that I think that this interview is so interesting is that Dr. Strassman is looking at life through a different perspective. He's trying to figure out how he can coordinate prophecy in the human race. I do think that most of us have the ability to see into the future, to understand things, to be able to acknowledge certain conscious levels that some of us haven't even dialed into yet. I think some of us get that wake-up call every day, we turn that snooze button and we push it on and we eventually pull the alarm clock out of the wall and throw it out the window. And we keep buying new alarm clocks and they keep going off, we keep throwing those out of the window. But some of us finally realize that the alarm's going to go off, but eventually if you keep turning it off long enough, it won't continue to go off. But everybody gets the wake-up call. You know, I got it several times when I was younger, and I turned it off, and one day I woke up, I had a very interesting dream. It was such an interesting dream that I woke up in my sleep screaming. And I realized that I had to make some changes. I realized not only did I have to make some changes, but there's more to life than meets the eye. I was given a chance glimpse. I could have taken that glimpse, been scared off my butt, drank some more the next day and tried to forget it. But I decided not to do that. I decided to step up to the plate. And whether it takes you to try medicinal mushrooms or DMT or what have you, to see outside of yourself, more power to you. I'm not endorsing drugs, but I am endorsing you to find yourself. You know, some of us choose certain meditation. Some of us choose to be quiet observers. Some of us choose to be active observers, participants of life. And I think that's key. In order to really find yourself, we have to participate in life and the way that we feel and we think. We have to allow life to just get all over us. You know, a friend of mine the other day was talking about how if a wave crashes on you just the right way, it feels like a massage. Never heard that before. Interesting. You know, I think that you have to go out and feel and figure out what means something to you. You know, I'm beginning to figure out, and every day I find new things that interest me. Every day I get to the next level of something that beyond amazing. Every day I see nature and I look at it and I have awe and sheer awness. Every day I see people run past the most beautiful things in the world. And every day when I can, I stop and smell the roses. You know, I believe that that's one way to stay young in this world. Stop and smell the roses. And your roses could be various options, aspects of life. It's seeing the beauty in things. And a lot of times we see that beauty, right? We see the amazing beauty and stuff, but we don't stop to enjoy it. We think that we're going to gain all this time. One day I'll have all this time. And all this time, I'll have all this time. And you know what? I hate to say it, but you know, you could be collecting time, just like a lot of y'all are collecting vacation time at work. And what happens to most of us on the vacation time? It goes away at the end of the year. We don't get it. We don't get to use it. It just goes away. Fleeting. Bye, vacation time. It's the same with our life. Bye, living. Bye, associating with things of nature and understanding prophecy and understanding that we are tiny gods too. Why can't we be big gods? Why can't we be the inner self, the big inner self that's trying to get out? Our inner self that's trying to say, I'm here. I'm sick of being captive. I'm sick of being in the small, tiny world that you have all these rules and regulations and things that I can and can't do and things that matter and things that don't matter. Open your eyes, open your third eye, open your consciousness to analyze the fact that you have greatness within. You create amazing things for the people around you. You believe, and you know that a lot of those beliefs that seem, maybe far-fetched, maybe some of those beliefs that you've only shared with one or two people or a select few, maybe some of those beliefs that you haven't shared with anyone, you know that some of those, if not all of those, are real. And I think you deserve it, and you owe it to yourself to get some validation, don't you? Validation can be fun. I don't think we need complete validation, though, to believe and to know. And I know that I believe in myself, and sometimes I don't get complete validation, but I know that I believe in what I'm doing, and I believe in the cause, and I believe in what Ashley Burgess is doing. If you have any ideas for any upcoming shows, please get with me. You can go on my website at www.ashleyburgess.com. All those websites start with three W's. Just kidding. Ashleyburgess.com. And I look forward to hearing some of your ideas. Just go to the contact page and let me know what you want to hear, what you want to hear about, and the subject matter that matters to you. Open your eyes. Be conscious. Allow life to be with you. Stay tuned. We have a great show for you next. And Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in 3 shakes.